no way do you sit there and look at the performance of anybody on the coaching staff other than special teams, I think, for 2018 and say that was good enough for the Arizona Cardinals. But for everybody that, as upset as you were through the 2018 season as a fan, and you had a right to be. I'm not, of course you had a right to be. Michael Bidwell is proving he was more upset than you were when you look at the amount of money he's spending for the coaches to go away and not coach. And then on top of it, I think he's paying a premium for assistant coaches because he's, I think financially he's actually accepting the fact that there are so many questions. There's this question out there, is this an attractive job? Mm-hmm. Whatever the job is an attractive job when the team only kept their coach for 1 year and went after a Big 12 fired football coach? When you do those two things, it's not like, do you want to live in Arizona? Do you like Michael Bidwell? Do you believe it? Even though believing in Josh Rosen is important, it's kind of one of those things where people are looking at this job with the question, does anybody really want it? And you have to pay somebody enough to overcome that hesitation. And when you look at the names that they're getting as assistants, granted they still don't have an OC, boy, it shows that Michael Bidwell is doing more than the famous phrase, I take responsibility for the previous hire, because he's paying for it.
Yes.
I'll tell you what, if I'm building my resume and I'm trying to advance my career, I want to be part of this staff. There's only upside. This is the worst record in the NFL. There's only three wins. Polly. From last year, they were dead last in every offensive category.
It's a good boy, Paul.
On defense, they were dead last in rush defense. We get it. I mean, there is so much room for growth and improvement. And if you're part of the staff, that all of a sudden, I mean, if you get to six wins, that's a win. You just double the win total from the year prior. And if you can actually make a run at a wild card playoff spot and turn this thing around, and honestly, I think the talent definitely underperformed the win total. Were they a playoff team last year? No. But they definitely weren't a three-win team either. So you come in as a capable coaching staff, and you churn out a pretty decent season. That's going to reflect well on you.
So now all of a sudden you've got your owner out there, and he's spending a lot of money. He's spending a lot of money on coaches that aren't going to be coaching here, Basinonians. That's number one. And number two, he's spending a lot of money bringing in coaches that will coach here. And now all of a sudden, you've got a mandate to spend money. You got $70 million in cap room. That to me, and now all of a sudden you're not going to go out and push all your chips in on free agency. Listen, free agency is never, ever going to be the way to build a team. It isn't. But a couple of key free agent signings can really change things. And I think a guy like a C.J. Mosley that is out there, I think he's a possibility. I don't know if the Baltimore Ravens are going to allow him to walk away. I don't know if they'll use a franchise tag on him, but I don't know what the situation is, and forgive me that. But I will tell you right now, C.J. Mosley is a Mike linebacker, perfect. The quintessential Mike linebacker in the National Football League, as far as I'm concerned. 6'2", 250 pounds, 250. You want somebody who's going to jam it up in there? You want somebody who's going to bust it, put their face, put the screws on somebody, my brothers. That's C.J. Mosley. And then guess who else is out there? K.J. Wright. This one right here is very interesting because K.J. Wright is, in my opinion, the most underrated weak side inside linebacker on the market. In the league, I should say. Weak side inside linebacker, a guy that can cover, and a guy that is excellent in regard to being a run stopper.
There's the argument will never, ever end. Greatest free agent signing of all time. Reggie White, because he actually made people think of going back to Green Bay, because you forget Green Bay was like a destination of death for a long time. Or Drew Brees is doing pretty good in New Orleans.
Yes.
Okay. So, but either one, what I do have a theory, even though you can have an example on each side. I think you can build a team with free agency defensively. I don't know why I think that. I just think, hey, cornerback, go cover that guy. And you know, unlike last year, you know your system. You see the tape on whether or not a guy fits that system. You can find people to do what you want. while offense is so much about chemistry and building up, and do you have that with the quarterback? Does the offensive line gel together? There's a reason why you're a free agent. Sorry, Justin Pugh, that they didn't want to keep you. You know, and I think it's harder to bring an offense together, so I don't like free agency much on offense. I love it on defense. Is that, did I sell you on that at all?
No, I think it was a good theory, though, Douglas.
Okay.
But I think, honestly, it depends on the individual. Listen, KJ Wright, Paul. All the years you've watched KJ Wright play for the Seattle Seahawks and everything you've heard about him, do you think he's going to sign a contract and suddenly, whatever?
No.
That's not who he is.
And you know what? Steve Wilks said something at the podium, and I know we've already advanced to 2019. I think it was week 16, might have been week 17, and someone asked him about the future. And the first thing he said about this Cardinals team that he would want going forward are guys who love the game. That we have to find guys who love the game.
Amen.
That is very tough to assess, and it's very tough to measure, especially coming out of the draft. But all you have to do is look at a KJ Wright and the way he plays the game and the way he's been doing it. Fourth round pick. I just looked it up. He was a fourth round pick. We love to rip John Schneider and how his
fourth round pick.
I mean, no, I'm just saying. Look at the way he's delivered.
I mean, 104 overall.
You want dogs, and he definitely checks that box. Whenever you watch, and all you have to do is talk to guys about in the Cardinals locker room about the Seattle Seahawks defense, and yeah, you know, for years the Legion of Boom got all the press and Richard Sherman the mouth, but they would cite guys like Bobby Wagner before he got the Pro Bowls and the acclaim, and a KJ Wright.
KJ Wright, man, all day long. There are a couple, and here's the other thing you've got to understand, Basinonians. In today's NFL, inside linebackers aren't getting a lot of money. They're not getting a ton of money. Neither
especially
are safeties.
The 3-4.
But inside linebackers are not getting a ton of money on the open market out there. And that's one of the reasons why I think it might be intriguing for the Arizona Cardinals and Steve Keim in particular to look at one of those two guys and go,
Well, if you get a 250-pounder like C.J. Mosley, now it's much more feasible to keep a Deion Buchanan. So now you can have your big run thumper in a C.J. Mosley and Deion Buchanan. And obviously, his market's been suppressed by last season. Maybe you get a decent one-year deal on him, and you put those two there in the interior.
If you get a decent one-year deal on Deion, whom I love, what a dog he is, ladies and gentlemen. But Hassan Reddick is a guy, too, that you could see playing that weak side inside linebacker.
Greatest show on grass. It's returning to TPC Scottsdale. Waste Management Phoenix Open tees off January 28th through February 3rd. Head to the rewards page for more info, and you can even win tickets at arizonasports.com. Coming up next, man, I hate this. I have to do it. I bet there were so many of you about a year and a half ago screaming at the radio every time I had this opinion, and I was dead wrong. We would be so much better off. Kyrie Irving just stepped on me last night. You have to hear what he said.
Can you pull that clip where Doug just admitted on air, I was wrong? I need that.
The last time I ever say it is next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Important for you to judge this. There are already some people that are challenging the authenticity of this.
Really?
This is, in my opinion, one of the best pieces of what we call sound in the business we're going to get from an NBA player all year. Kyrie Irving opened up and said some pretty amazing things, and a lot of people are thinking, you know what? He could have kept all of this quiet. He could have just done it, kept it quiet, but he's going public for attention. So they're calling him out on this. Let me give you a very, very quick backstory on why this is a Suns topic here as it relates to the Boston Celtics. Celtics win four in a row at home, crush the Nets, crush the Pacers. They're looking good. They go on the road, and they lose to the Heat, and then in a game on the road at Miami, then they go to Orlando. They lose on the road at Orlando, and on the final inbounds pass, there's a series of arguments, kind of heated conversations. Kyrie Irving, Brad Stevens.
Okay.
Then on the last play of the game, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum don't do, according to Kyrie, what he wanted them to do. As the last second shot is going up with the Celtics in the game down by two, he's already yelling at his teammates, already angry and fired up about what's happened. And then they end up missing the shot. They lose. They go to Brooklyn and they lose, but they keep it close and it's a pretty entertaining game. Well, Kyrie Irving didn't play in that game. And one of his teammates said, well, the reason why we played well is we weren't pointing fingers today.
Oh, okay.
So after Kyrie Irving claimed a lot of their losses are due to immaturity and inexperience, now you have a player that's on the rookie side of things saying, well, this is why, because we weren't pointing fingers. So right now the Suns are getting ready to take on the Raptors tonight. The Raptors are on a back end of a back-to-back. They were in Boston last night,
okay,
where the Boston Celtics won. Kyrie Irving spoke to the media afterwards and said something that nobody saw coming.
I'll tell you one thing, and obviously this is something that it was a big deal for me because I had to call Bron, you know, and tell him, like, you know, I apologize for being that young player that wanted to everything at his, you know, at his fingertips, and I wanted everything to be at, you know, my threshold. I wanted to be the guy that led us to championship. I wanted to be the leader. I wanted to be all that, and, you know, the responsibility of being the best player in the world and leading a team is something that's not meant for many people, and Bron was one of those guys that came to Cleveland and tried to really show us what it's like to win a championship, and it was hard for him. And sometimes getting the most out of the group, it's not the easiest thing in the world. And like I said, only few are meant for it or chosen for it. And, you know, I feel like the best person to call was him because, you know, he's been in the situation. You know, he's been there with me where I've been the young guy of, you know, being a 22-year-old kid and, you know, wanting everything. He wanted everything right now. You know, coming off an all-star year starting and then, you know, this heck of a presence comes back, and now I got to adjust my game to this guy. And, you know, you take it personal, but at the end of the day, he just wants what's best, and he has a legacy he wants to leave, and he has a window he wants to capture. So I think what that brought me back to is, like, all right, how do I get the best out of this group of the success they had last year, and then helping them realize what it takes to win a championship.
You know what, Doug Lisa, I have no idea what it is you're about to say about Kyrie and what he just said, but I can tell you this, Space Anonians, I believe every word that Kyrie just said was genuine.
There's a lot of people challenging him, saying that he's just doing it for attention.
Just come on. The way he said that, totally believe it.
When I heard this, it was one of those things where it's one thing to be wrong. You're gonna be wrong all the time. But to have the single worst opinion I've ever had in my 20 years as a talk show host.
Which was?
That's why I need to recant.
Oh. Really?
You have been proven wrong, sir.
Oh, and have
you? You have been weighed, you have been measured, and you have been found wanting.
Wrong! You need to recant, sir. Ready the Iron Maiden.
Gave you every day to get it out of the way early.
I recant!
All right, Wolf, how do I do this? The world is the Earth is the center of the universe?
Yeah, the world is flat.
The world is flat. The Earth is the center of the universe. And all of you that screamed at the radio 18 months ago, to trade Josh Jackson for Kyrie Irving. And I said, no, no, no.
No.
I'm sorry. I was wrong. And the Suns would be exactly where the Celtics are if they would have done it.
Oh, my goodness.
Please understand why I said what I said. I said Devin Booker's the guy, and if Kyrie Irving refuses to adjust his game, for LeBron freaking James, he's never going to adjust his game for Devin Booker.
Mm.
There's no way I want that immature of a guy who thinks the whole team is about him to come here and then try to say, now I'm going to take over, because it's not going to go anywhere. And when I heard him say that about the Celtics, and he admitted, I wanted to be the guy, and that's why I complained. That's why I didn't adjust. And now I realize how hard it is to take a young team and try to mold them into a championship team. Maybe he's not going about it the right way. Maybe he is a little too demonstrative on the court showing guys up. But for him to admit that I had to apologize for the way I was acting that long ago shows that if I would have given Kyrie more time, that same adjustment period would have happened here. I think that exact same speech would have happened in a Suns uniform after
a
game.
That's a big, big assumption.
It is.
That's a huge assumption.
If he just did it with the Celtics.
Yeah, but again, you're talking about the Boston Celtics, and you're talking about a good team. They have a good team. Do you think it would have gone the same way here as it did in Boston? I don't think so. I think Kyrie Irving would not have stayed here. Period. And by the way, you wouldn't have DeAndre Ayton either.
Okay.
No, you wouldn't.
I know that.
You wouldn't
have
DeAndre Ayton. You'd finish number 9 in the Western Conference, number 8 maybe in the Western Conference.
I do accept that part of it, but I just can only look at it from the standpoint of when I sat and watched Josh Jackson play games at Allen Fieldhouse, and no, I wasn't at Allen Fieldhouse, but when I watched him play, and I thought, this guy cares about defense and is going to be able to develop a jump shot eventually, this is awesome. And I still believe in Josh Jackson, but my main point of not wanting Kyrie Irving, I knew how good he was. Everybody sees what he can do with the ball. But it was, I thought it was all about him. Maybe this is still all about him. Maybe he's still looking for attention.
I don't think it is.
I loved what he said. I thought it was unbelievably powerful. And for him to recognize what he is recognizing, I'm saying that's exactly what the Suns could have used.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you right now, if in fact I believe that, I would agree with Dougley's, but I do not believe that. The paradigm is completely different here in Phoenix than it is in Boston. Can I get an amen on that?
The amen.
Paradigm is completely different. There are so many different variables and stipulations that you've got to take into account when you consider Kyrie Irving and whether or not he actually would have had that revelation here as opposed to Boston.
That's fair. We do not have their ownership. We don't have their ownership group, and we do not have Brad Stevens.
Just a huge seismic shift. Because of that, I'm glad you had that epiphany. I'm so glad for Kyrie. It's going to make him so much better, and it has already made him such a better player on the defensive end of the floor in particular. This young guy that has grown up before our very eyes and now understands the weight of greatness and the responsibility thereof.
Now, I admit,
I'm not sure he sees that epiphany here.
A little of my recantation is involved with the things that I know that I don't mind admitting to now. I would never have said this before, but I hope he's okay with this. I consider the former general manager of the Cavs, David Griffin, a friend. He was here with the Suns for a long time, and that doesn't make me special. There's tons of media in this town that like David Griffin. Good dude. And when he was going through a lot of this stuff with Kyrie Irving, no matter how big the frustration was in Kyrie's world, David Griffin never thought he was a bad dude. Never thought he was a kid that was never going to get it. Never thought he was some immature punk that just wanted attention. He always said he just doesn't know how to handle LeBron, and it's hardly anybody does.
Mm-hmm.
And he really supported Kyrie Irving, to me, behind Kyrie's back. If there's a way to support someone behind their back, he did that to me a lot. So, and I'm thinking of all those things that David Griffin said to me during that time when I thought, Kyrie, no, you're terrible, blah, you know, and stuff like that. And now I see that speech. That moved me. That speech I just thought was fantastic.
This is exactly what Devin Booker's got to do.
Amen.
He has got to do what Kyrie Irving is doing. Kyrie has worked so hard on the defensive end of the floor now in setting the tone, the expectation. We play two ways here. In Boston, if you're going to put on a Celtics jersey, we play two ways. That's the same thing Devin Booker's got to do.
Yep. Coming up next, the Cardinals offensive coordinator position is still open. All right. So what do you have to see? What are the four things you've got to see from that OC or you don't want him here? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
It's Four Down Territory with Doug and Wolf.
Here's what Four Down Territory is. You choose the order of importance. It's not number one is the most important unless you think during a game first down is most important. And the three of us, Paul Calvisi, sideline reporter for the Arizona Cardinals, Doug and Wolf, look at one topic and then go four deep on what we think are the big issues within the topic.
Yeah. In that order of importance, Paul, and then just Doug and Wolf.
Today's question or topic, in your choice for an offensive coordinator for the Arizona Cardinals, not the who, the what. What are the four prerequisites this guy has to have to be the right guy for the Arizona Cardinals?
First down.
First down for me, before you walk in the building, I want to know who they are. Who are the quarterbacks that you will claim as your kids? as your guys, as the people that you can say, I was involved heavily with the development of that guy. Prove you are a quarterback developer before I worry about anything else.
Listen, you have to possess the ability to listen. You don't know it all. You don't know exactly what your player is going to be able to do. You have to be able to listen to the players, incorporate their feedback, and go from there. If you come in as a know-it-all, guess what? You're going to go nowhere. You better listen to those around you, including the head coach, all the way down to the 53rd guy on the roster, and then make your decisions from there after incorporating their input.
All right, Basinonians, my first down to four down territory has got to be, I want an offensive coordinator to come into the Cardinals organization and be a mentor, so to speak, to Cliff Kingsbury. I want a guy that has experience. I want a guy that is going to look at Cliff Kingsbury and the concepts, the brilliance, Lord willing, that Cliff Kingsbury is going to bring to the Arizona Cardinals and then shape it, help him to actually shape those concepts into an offense. I want him to be a mentor, a guy that has been in the league for a long time and has a lot of experience in different offenses and in life. That's what I want.
Second down.
My second down is I want this guy to have the lowest ego possible. Every coach has an ego, and that's nothing to be ashamed of. But you've got to be able to come into that room and fully accept the praise of only one man, Cliff Kingsbury. Because nobody else is going to give you any praise. Mm. There's nobody in the media that's really going to know what you're doing. There's nobody even in the football world that's really going to know what you're doing. Everyone's going to give Cliff Kingsbury the credit if this works, and everybody's going to blame Steve Keim if it doesn't. That's where this is.
You got that right.
So you're the offensive coordinator. You're getting none of this. None of it. Can you handle it? Can you handle success when no one gives you the credit as long as Cliff Kingsbury knows you're the one key that helped him out?
Our second down would be, can you adjust? Can you make the in-game adjustments after the first or second defensive series? And you're looking to go, wait a minute, guess what? We got to throw everything out the window. We're just going to hit the reset button coming out of halftime. Can you make the halftime adjustments? Do you have the ability to read and react to what the defense is doing and adjust accordingly?
Okay, my second down to four down territory has got to be, you know what? I want to see your resume. I want to see that you have worked on the offensive side of the ball in many different areas. I want to know that you were a play caller. I want to know that you were an offensive coordinator. I want to know that you were a quarterback coach. I want to see your resume, and I want that resume to be filled with experience at the NFL level of coaching players.
Third down.
I got a combination of things as my third down. A little bit of what Wolf said. I want been there, done that. I want a guy that's going to be able to say, okay, listen, Cliff, relax. We've got this and this going on. But also, I want a special tribute that's very hard to do and very few people have. I want you to have the ability behind a closed door when nobody knows that you told Cliff Kingsbury, you're wrong. You're wrong. We're doing it this way. And then when you open that door, no one ever finds out you told Cliff Kingsbury he's wrong. And if he still sticks to his guns when you told him he's wrong, then you lovingly and happily do exactly what Cliff Kingsbury said. Don't be a yes man with the door shut, but be very agreeable with the door open.
Have you ever been convicted of grand theft robbery? Because we want someone...
Yesterday at the show meeting, yes.
We want someone who's going to steal. Who's going to steal... We're going to call it best practices. Wink, wink. But you're going to steal from teams around the league. You're going to do what Doug did with Maloney yesterday. And take her light bulb of an idea and in front of a packed room and an official station meeting, present it as if it's your own.
Man, I did that.
Just deadpan it,
with zero remorse or culpability.
Full remorse!
You're going to steal and present it as it's your own and hope it succeed, and we need that in the next OC.
And then just go like your kids and say, well, I forgot.
I forgot.
Okay, Basinoni, it's my third down to four down territory here has got to be, I want an offensive coordinator for the Arizona Cardinals that is not looking to become a head coach. Boy, is that difficult to find right there. That's a red herring in the NFL, baby. I want an offensive coordinator that doesn't need to get the credit, therefore isn't really looking to become a head coach. That's third down.
Fourth down.
My fourth down, meaning it's close. You got the first three, but it's fourth and two. I need something to pick me up and go over the edge. Was the best teacher you ever had in junior high, high school, were they a Nobel Prize winner? Were they a nuclear physicist? Were they somebody that invented it? Or were they somebody that learned it and then presented it to you in a way that made it make sense?
Mm.
This is not this offensive coordinator's offense. He's going to be learning it from Cliff Kingsbury. How good of a teacher are you? How good are you to take something that's not yours and present it in a way that you believe in and everybody can trust that you know what you're talking about and then run with it themselves in a way that they're not overthinking every time?
The final question, the final qualification comes down to a simple question. Do you know Sean McVay? Have you ever met Sean McVay? Did you ever shook the hand of a Sean McVay?
Is anybody tired of Sean McVay?
Do you know anyone who knows Sean McVay? What is your connection to Sean McVay?
Paul,
we need to know that right now.
Paul, you just made me a Saints fan. Right there, I'm now a Saints fan. Rams have got to lose because I'm tired of Sean McVay.
Okay, basically, it's my fourth down of four down territory has got to be. I want an offensive coordinator for the Arizona Cardinals that has experience with players. Experience with quarterbacks in particular. Experience, whether it was as a play caller, whether it was as an offensive coordinator, whether it was as a quarterback's coach. I want experience with guys that have actually done something in this league. And when I say guys, I'm talking about quarterbacks like Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. That's why I want Tom Clements.
Hmm. Bear, hit the close.
So to recap, Doug could tell you.
You use it there?
That was good.
If you ask Doug the on-base percentage from Wilmer Flores, the new D-back from 2014, Doug could probably tell you that. But he just happened to forget that the idea he presented yesterday was actually the property of Maloney. So,
okay. You know Walter Johnson had 110 shutouts? Isn't that amazing?
Oh, it slipped my mind.
How do you have 110 shutouts?
How do you capture somebody else's recollection and then regurgitate it as your own? Yeah. That's fascinating.
Well, it's just my bad. It's just hashtag my bad. That's all it is. That's the way, today's culture.
I totally did that. I totally did that.
Really amazing.
Coming up next, says the man that answered his own question in a conversation once.
That was true.
Okay. Wolf.
I got to tell that story this morning.
Wolf, it was released. The first one was released.
Oh, no.
And now we've got to study it. It's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
No! Really?
Yeah.
Oh, here you go.
Are you talking to me? Mel Kiper! Yeah, Mel! Hey! Spec! The draft! Respect creating an entire genre. Built on the NFL draft. Yeah, Bill.
Your Pantera call-out is driven by AutoNation. 13 dealerships in the Valley. 100,000 new and pre-owned vehicles on AutoNation.com. Find out what you're looking for today. Mel Kiper Jr. has just come out, and I can understand why.
No.
Because we now have the list of players, and today is the last day a player that's declared for the NFL draft that is an undergrad can then change his mind. Last day they had before they had to declare. Today is the last day that they can change their mind. So you can declare, take 3 or 4 days and say, you know what? I'm not ready. I shouldn't go into the draft. But I don't even remember of anybody that's, it happens all the time in the NBA. I don't know why they do this to college football players that you have 4 days without the combine.
No.
The NBA and the college basketball is so much smarter. You can declare, go through the NBA combine, and then after talking to scouts, say, you know what? this probably isn't for me yet, and then not go.
I see.
Kind of dumb to not have the combine yet, and they've already got to change their mind.
Yeah.
But having said that, the number one pick in the 2019 NFL draft, according to Mel Kiper Jr., the Arizona Cardinals select Nick Bosa, defensive end, Ohio State.
Oh, okay, how does that make you feel right there, Basinonians, when you hear that? Nick Bosa. First of all, I want to see, and I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know about this. I've been told that Joey Bosa will make a business decision from time to time. And he's not alone in that regard in the National Football League. There's a lot of guys that will make a business decision. In other words, they're not going to play unless they're 100% healthy.
Okay.
No, I want a guy that's going to play when he's 80%. I want a guy that's going to fight through it and say, no, this is my job. This is what I do. I'm going to fight through it.
I'm going to make the strangest comparison ever for Nick Bosa, and I realize it's weird, and I'll do that in just a second, but let me give you Mel Kiper's opinion first.
This is a draft that will be loaded with defensive talent, starting with my top-ranked prospect, Ohio State defensive end Nick Bosa.
Bosa is unblockable.
He's an elite pass rusher, exactly what you want to close out game. And he's my projected number one overall pick for the Cardinals.
Yeah,
that,
and I was
that was
talking,
Dave Passion there, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking about Joey Bosa because I think Nick Bosa would be the same way.
My comp for Nick Bosa, and this is for a lot of you, is going to be completely out of left field. And that is Beanie Wells.
Beanie Wells, wow.
Beanie Wells is my comparison because I love the phrase that Kirk Herbstreit said to us so many years ago when we had him on this show to talk Ohio State and the NFL draft. And this is when we were feeling great because remember the Arizona Cardinals had draft pick number 31.
Yeah.
Because they were the Super Bowl loser.
Yeah.
We were in a great spot, and I admitted Beanie Wells, it was pretty fantastic that he was still on the board at 31.
No doubt.
I admit I wanted Ziggy Hood instead, but I could understand why somebody wanted him. But this is what he said. He said, Beanie Wells, when he's right, is the best player on the field.
Yeah.
He's just not right very often.
Yeah, okay.
I think I can understand you think this is stupid of me. I'm looking at the gene pool of the Bosas, and I'm saying you got hurt, and your brother gets hurt quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I'm with you on some of the business decisions I think I'm seeing. And I realize what I'm saying. Nick Bosa might go the whole year and be far and away rookie of the year. And when he's right, I agree totally that he might even be one of the, if not the best player on the field.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think at the number one pick in the NFL draft, he's going to be right enough when I have so much other talent.
Yeah.
This draft is so deep that I would rather get a guy that's 90% as good as Nick Bosa and plays 100% of the time and be sure about it then take the chance on Nick Bosa not being a guy I can count on every single game.
And I may be absolutely wrong on whether or not the Bosa and the Bosa family, ladies and gentlemen, would actually go out there and make business decisions. I may be wrong on that completely. But my wish is that the Arizona Cardinals would be able to trade out of the number one spot. Because we all know everyone wants quarterbacks.
This is how Mel Kiper Jr. in his mock draft starts the explanation of Nick Bosa. He doesn't start it by talking about Nick Bosa. He says General Manager Steve Keim is going to have a chance to trade down and accumulate picks, and he should look hard at it too, because this roster has been stripped of talent since the Cardinals went to the NFC Championship game back in 2016.
Yeah, you know, to me, I'd love to trade down to number six, right? I believe the Giants have that pick, yeah. The New York Giants at number six. I'd love to trade down there and pick up a first-round pick in the 20s.
This is Mel Kiper Jr. talking about, okay, what happens after Bosa, and you might be onto something there.
After Bosa, I have Kentucky outside linebacker Josh Allen to the Niners, Alabama defensive tackle Quinnen Williams to the Jets, and LSU cornerback Greedy Williams to the Raiders.
Those are outstanding picks. He's got the Bucks going with Jonah Williams, but here's where it's where it really starts, is Giants at 6, Jacksonville at 7, and a little bit of Denver at 10, possibly, if they already want to bail on Case Keenum. Bengals could use a quarterback. Maybe Green Bay would like a developmental quarterback. They're at number 12, and Miami Dolphins are at 13. I don't think Green Bay's in a position where they would trade up for a quarterback, but I think Miami, Cincinnati, maybe Denver, probably not. Definitely Jacksonville and the New York Giants are all in a position to trade up. And then there's the massive wild card, and that is the Oakland Raiders. Do the Oakland Raiders feel like there's not a quarterback in this draft strong enough for us to make a trade for, or we're going to live with David Carr for another year, or do they look at it and say, we've got to get one of these guys?
Mm-hmm.
And if they love Dwayne Haskins, it's not going to hurt them at all to trade up three spots to go to number one. Cardinals are sitting at 4, and they pick up one of the last two draft picks. Probably Dallas's is what you would shoot for, but remember the trade to Khalil Mack for Khalil Mack, so they've already got the Bears pick too. You pick up one of those two draft picks and then something else on the back end. That's a nice trade.
I think you're right about that. I think the Raiders.
But I don't know how the Raiders feel about Carr.
Right?
That's the question.
Yes.
It's a combination. How do they feel about Carr as it compares to the quarterbacks that are in this draft? If they think Carr's about as good as Haskins, well, then just suck it up and deal with Carr until a better quarterback comes around in the draft later. But if you're John Gruden, wouldn't you love to get your hands on Haskins now in another year of a vagabond franchise when you don't know if you're playing in Oakland, San Diego, San Antonio, who some people have even thrown out Arizona. You don't even know where you're going. So you've got another year where nobody cares.
Yeah.
And that you can train Dwayne Haskins in a year that nobody cares.
Let's hope this is the case where John Gruden falls in love with a player. Because he will do it.
This is a huge combine.
He will do it. There's
this is a
no
huge combine for Dwayne Haskins,
yes,
or Kyler Murray to do well so it benefits the Cardinals in a trade scenario.
Think about it. The Raiders have 3 first-round picks. Number 4, number 24, and number 27. 3. They are a very likely candidate. Okay, you know what? We'll give you our number 4 pick. We'll take the number 1 pick overall, and we'll give you 24.
Yeah. Now, are we dreaming a little bit? Yeah, because we have zero idea how they feel about Carr. They truly, we don't know.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, man, but he yells at him an awful lot like him.
No, listen, John Gruden is a guy that falls in love with a player.
Yes, he does.
It's not just a quarterback.
We've seen him do it on the draft coverage.
Period.
Coming up next from the Auction Community Studios, the Cardinals have 3 known offensive coordinator candidates left. Wolf did what I hate it when he does this. Kind of convinced me that he's right on one of them. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.